Security alert, all decks.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your system sucks.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Remember, hacking is more than just a crime.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
That I need to know, and I need to know now.
You are listening to Radio Free America.
The radio you have belongs to the regional communication system. Please call 1-888-420-8222 to get information on returning the radio and collecting a $50 reward. The radio you have belongs to the regional communication system. Please call 1-888-420-8222 to get information on returning the radio and collecting a $50 reward.
Can't do that. I'm not stopping it though. All right, here we go.
Fucking A.
Fucking A. God, son of a.
Jiminy.
All right.
Hey, deep breath.
All right.
Oh. Deep breath. Count to 10. You got a drink? Do you have a drink, Clayton?
I do. Let me drink this water here.
Take a drink. Calm down. I'm gonna.
Nice, delicious tap water. I've been off the caffeine. This is the problem. I've been off the freaking caffeine for 2 days. No, going on 3 days, and I am irritable as all get out. I am just
excuse,
fucking
there.
Wound. I'm like more wound now than I was on the shit. The shit being caffeine. I'm serious. I would, you know, I'd take a big shot of even like diet, you know, soda or something. Or that's my favorite. You know, I love that chemical taste. Anything, and I would almost get like a, you know, I'd just be like, yeah, that's a good buzz, man. I'd just get all mellow because I'd be enjoying the rush, right? Now I'm just fucking wound. I'm just on edge.
Need that, get that whole hacker cliche with the Jolt Cola going on.
Jolt Cola, nothing. You want to get some shit. Get off the shit, right? Get off the caffeine. Go, you know, exercise, whatever. I went skating today. Dude, I'm just like wound. I got energy. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. All right. We got to get on with the show. The show being Radio Freak America. I am Duel.
And I am Stank Biggie in the hizzy for shit.
Right. Thank you for joining me, Stank, in this fahizzy. Okay. Let's start with a lot of feedback. Lots of feedback. Good feedback, by the way. Start with an email from Thomas. Thomas writes, hi. You say that your radio show and then perhaps also your website, oldschoolfreak.com, is all about technology, privacy, and freedom. Which makes me have to ask you, why the fuck do you put up movies encoded with a non-free and proprietary Real Media codec? Did it ever occur to you that many people can't and won't play such files? Both Zine and MPlayer, Nick's users' movie players of choice, will not play these files out of the box. I guess you will either have to use a plugin illegally or download some non-free, non-open source application full of evil and dangerous code in order to play them. Keywords are privacy and freedom. freedom to choose your media player and not be forced to download shit from the real media bastards. Please think about this. By the way, sort of like the show, can't compare to In the Now, though, Thomas. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for being passionate, by the way. I sincerely appreciate this email. I'm glad, you know, apathy has no place in the community, okay? People need to have strong feelings. So I thank you for this email. I will address it in 3 points. Point one, numbers. We've had 4 videos on the site, 1 MPEG, 3 real media. 2 of those real media videos have been sent to me, have been created and sent to me by others. They were great. I put them up. They're there. The other one, yes, I did make real media format. So if somebody sends me a great QuickTime movie, right, I will put it up on the site.
Well, no matter what format it's in, QuickTime, MOV, ASF, whatever format it is, we'll put it up.
Right,
you know?
And this will beg the third point, which you will see. Second point, consideration, I did consider, and especially the one video I made, I did consider the real media format. Quality is crappy, I knew that, but size was small. I'm trying to be nice to the to the dial-up users. Yes, I do know it's proprietary, but there are free players on most every platform: Windows, OS X, Linux, maybe even a Unix. I think there may be a Unix player, a specific Unix player, real media player. I'm not sure. So that's point two, considerations. We did consider that. And three, the most important point: freedom. Somebody creates something, and they want to make it, a .mov, a QuickTime movie format. I will give them that opportunity. I will let them have the freedom to choose what format they want and put it up on the site so they can get their message out. We should be able to have the freedom to choose what type of format we want to give people. And you have the freedom not to like it, not to view it, or not to give a rat's ass. I'm glad he does give a rat's ass. He is very passionate about it, and I appreciate that. I want people like that listening to the show. I want people like that in the community. So freedom goes both ways. Yes, and it's freedom, not open source, okay? It's not technology privacy open source. It's technology privacy freedom, okay? Let's not kill the abortion doctor here, okay? I want freedom. I want as much freedom as we can have, okay? I want freedom of information. I want freedom of speech. I want everybody who is in the community, who shares in this show, to be able to have the freedom to explore the technology they want and not go to the frickin' slammer for it. And we'll do what we can. The latest video, I definitely know. What is it? The Binary Revolution premiere video put up. I could not play that in my Linux Real Media Player. I don't know why. I think it was created using... I don't know how it was created. I don't know what the person who sent it to me created it with. I want to say some type of Microsoft product, on a Windows box, but it doesn't play in Linux, so I wasn't happy about that as well. So yeah, we do consider that. It does go both ways, the freedom thing, that is. And I hope you realize that, Thomas, and I hope everybody else does as well.
Actually, I have to agree, with Thomas. I hate Real. I hate Real movies.
Oh, yeah, the quality sucks.
The player itself is horrible. I mean, good luck trying to track forward and ahead, from the user standpoint, I don't particularly care for it, but,
the
tools that we have available, and that's what, somebody sends it to us, if that's all they have, our hands are somewhat tied on that. We have a right to make that choice. Like you said, we have a freedom to make that choice, too.
Right.
And just like, I don't want to sound like an ass to Thomas or anything. I consider his point greatly. I mean, maybe we can convert them somehow, or one of the listeners might want to convert it from Real Media to MPEG for us, and we can put those up or some other format. But at the same time, people every day have a freedom or a choice to even visit the site in the first place.
Right.
Oh, and they exercise their right to visit or not to visit. And then once you come to the site, which Thomas obviously has, and we appreciate it, you also have the freedom to download or not download. He's exercised his choice to not download. So, he won't see the videos unless or if and when we can convert them or someone can convert them for us. So, he has that right, and I respect that right, but, there's certain things that we can and can't do and don't have time to do. So
yeah, I was just going to say, there's other considerations like time. Like, I don't have the time to convert, you know. I just take what people give me. I don't have the time to say, hey, give me this so I can convert it and put it up this. You know, honestly, you know, this is a lot of work. There's other considerations like space on my site. You know, space is a little tight having 50 episodes up and all that art and all those great articles. So there's other considerations as well. But I hope everybody realizes, and there's a greater point to all of this, and that is what is freedom? Okay? If you don't like it, that's good. You know, strive for open source. Try to convert people. But if they want to use Windows because they like Windows, then great, enjoy Windows. Okay, next. Ooh, this is a good one. This is a good one. I like this one a lot. This is from Masta. I like that. Hello. I just wrote this letter as a thanks for helping to keep the information flowing for people. I stumbled upon your show while looking through some old sound files and almost instantly became hooked. It's just a great show that speaks for the way I and many others feel. At my school, we have an organization known as POAP, P-O-A-P, pronounced POAP, a.k.a. Peoples Oppressed and Pissed. I love that. Early on in the school year, we became concerned with the growing number of instances of school, personnel, unwarrantingly searching lockers of people who simply act different from others and refuse to be a jock, cheerleader, etc. At the same time, these people were being put into detention for being a few seconds late for class. I myself was right outside my class door when given a slip. Whereas those on the football team and elsewhere were pretty much allowed to walk the halls freely without punishment. The last straw was when we were required to give personal information, address, phone number, etc., to be posted on the internet for businesses and others to look at for resumes. In response, POAP began posting signs to protest this action I'll read it as it is. In response, POAP began posting signs to protest this action through signs which were not derogatory in any way. This action is supposed to be okayed by our student constitution and student handbook, which states that any student may post a sign as long as it is not vulgar, offensive, or derogatory. Within an hour, each sign was taken down, and myself, among other POAP members, were taken to the office and threatened with expulsion for, check this out, quote, enticing a school riot and or walkout, which we never did. All that was on the signs were, talk to the office and prevent the posting of your personal whereabouts. So, POAP's actions have been ceased, and as far as I know, the info will still be posted. Please, what can we do legally to, or at least make it, at the student's consent? Thanks again for having a great show, as POAP members listen to it at our meetings every Wednesday. Master, President of POAP, thank you very much for that email. And that's, boy, high school is a whole issue. School, you know, the schooling system is a whole issue in general. Remember that long post? Somebody wrote a great essay about, you know, with schools today are basically just prisons, right? They're just meant, you know, it's just an institution to keep kids busy, right? Because there's no apprenticeships, they're not working, it's, you know, and I really agree with that. And this kind of stuff, having your personal information of young people like that on the internet is just not good at all. I mean, beyond all the, you know, the worst case scenarios, you know, molesters, pedophiles, all that kind of stuff, you know, for really young kids. You know, using, if businesses want this information on the internet, right, to, you know, start getting at these kids with, you know, who knows, credit cards now, you know, start spamming them with the credit card applications even before they get out of high school, before they, you know, maybe know the responsibility of money, who knows, I mean, that is just horrible. I can't believe it. And what can they do? Let me think. What can you do? Well, first, you could go up a level, right? And I think you should. And the best way to do that is to write. Just like you wrote here, just like Thomas wrote. Write, well, without the swearing, though. Write an intelligent letter, right? Take the time, edit it, write a nice letter. A well-written letter. And go up a level beyond your school. Go to the school board. Go to some city council. And bring that up. And bring that issue to their attention. Again, with a well-written letter. I think that is going to go a long way. a long, long way. I think that is your next step, because that's just wrong. Beyond all the other crap that you probably have to put up with, you know, in this day and age, with, you know, post 9/11 and searching lockers and Columbine, and that's unfortunately, it might not be much you can do about that kind of stuff. But you know, fighting that, there's no reason at all for your personal information to be on the internet. If anything, that would be detrimental to your safety and the safety and health of everybody around you. So,
I'm sorry. I'm just bubbling over with anger at hearing this.
Yeah, that's absurd.
I, you know, especially like you said, they're not. At least they're claiming they're not part of the jocks and the cheerleaders and the, you know, the popular crowd or whatever like that. So, I mean, that, besides the simple fact of the huge, enormous, unspeakable invasion of privacy that's going on there by putting their names and numbers up there, besides the simple fact that you have a right to privacy in this country, you do. Just because you're a high school student, just because they want to put it up there and they think they're under some false facade of finding you a job and putting your resume out there.
Yeah.
You have a right to privacy. I don't see how they can force you to do that, first of all. And second of all, I'm going to be open-minded here. I'm going to assume what they're telling us is 100% true. Not to say that it's not, but I would love to see the posters that you say you put up. I'd like to see exactly how you worded it and what you exactly said.
Yeah.
And the school policy along with that to see. But, I mean, I writing a letter, I mean, yeah, I guess that's the politically correct thing to do or to say to do, but you mentioned that you did this without permission from the school. One thing might be to go through the proper channels, even though it's probably futile and they're probably going to shoot it down. Go through the proper channels just so you can cover your ass and say, I tried to post this the right way, and they wouldn't let me.
Right, and that's...
Once you have that ammunition, and I'm not telling you to go out and do this, I'm just throwing out some ideas and some possibilities, but that's the kind of thing that perhaps a media outlet might like to hear about. I think your local news channel, your local newspaper, might like to hear about how you're putting, or how about your school is putting out the private phone numbers and email addresses and whatever information they're putting out there on the internet of all the students with out there, obviously without some of their permission, you know, at least without one or without the members of your group of POAP. Obviously some of you have issues with it, but you're telling me that you can't have it removed. So maybe that's the kind of thing that if more people heard about it, more people knew about it, you know, we're bringing it up here and we'll spread the word to some, but that's more of a local thing. You might want to contact a local news outlet of some sort. Use the mass media when you need the mass media, even though they're despicable in some cases. In some cases, you can use that sensationalism to your advantage, and this sounds like a prime case for that.
That's a very good suggestion, Stank. Now, and let me take it a step further. Go to the EFF. Send a letter or an email to Off the Hook, right? Go inside the community. And when I say, you know, and you're right, cover your ass. Go ahead and go through the proper channels. Basically, you want to document everything. You want to write, and when I say nice, I mean nice, like write it in a professional manner and speaking with respect to whoever you write the letter to, right? Write that letter, document everything, go through the right channels, because a great man told me, he who documents makes money, okay? Document everything, go through the right channels, try that out, and then do just what Stank said, go to the newspaper. Because you can tell them, hey, right? If you don't have anything when you go to them, if you don't have any documentation, they're going to say, "What? Okay, whatever," right? But if you say, "Look, I've sent this letter to the school board, and they, you know, guffawed at me and shooed me away," well, and then they'll say, "Well, that's a huge breach of, you know, your personal privacy." So, again, take those suggestions. Let us know what happens, please. That's very important. I tell you what, these two. Two pieces of correspondence. We've hit on two of the keywords already. The last is from. I tell you what. There's two very classy people that I've had communications with, and that's Infamous and Occupant. They're very, very classy, and I have a letter here, a handwritten letter, from Infamous. Greetings, Duel. How are things going in Albuquerque? Hopefully, you are busy doing the things you want to do. I am writing to request 2 issues of Binary Revolution number 1. I have enclosed $12 to cover some costs, including postage. Thank you very much. And for everybody who's ordered Bin Rev and put in a little extra, you know, an extra buck for shipping, that means a lot. Thank you very much. Naturally, I'll add my latest thoughts about Radio Freak America. Really, who wouldn't? Back in episode 61, you talked about having balance. I say RFA has solid balance. You have stated your desire to keep the show dedicated to technology, and that is why I listen. Although you and your co-hosts do share your perspectives on current events, it is not dry or overbearing. Technology topics present themselves as the focus, from the latest reviews to the freak phone calls. RFA is, and that is exactly what I need for my own personal balance. Amongst the praise, I would still like to offer some suggestions. Linux is often mentioned, but I would enjoy hearing more on Windows, Apple, and OS X and other operating systems, especially operational aspects and ease, overall strengths and weaknesses, and general facts. I also recommend keeping a third rotating guest host with you and Stank Dog. The latest co-hosts, Wintermute, Mary Chan, and Slipmode, all bring different topics and perspectives, and all have been excellent. Lastly, how about discussing crypto on a show, working description, vulnerabilities, recommendations, etc.? Thanks for your time and work you do for the show, M from S. Thank you, M from S. That is great. Handwritten letter. That's just, it doesn't get any better. I'm going to save that, actually.
And you know what? That's purely coincidentally, that is very timely with today's show, because I actually have some Windows review coming up later in this episode. So, you know, you ask and you shall receive.
Yes, that is very true. It's going to be very good. Very good review, by the way. I mean, you think you're going to review Windows ME? No, it's going to be a great review. But first, oh, I did. You even told me to get it, and I forgot it. I forgot it. All right, we'll wait. We'll wait for the freak news.
Well, let me see if I have, let's see here.
Well, I want to talk some Wi-Fi real quick.
Okay.
Before we get to our standard fare, quickly, Wi-Fi news, very basic stuff here. There's a distro called, of course, I'm sure everybody's heard of War Linux. 0.5 is out, 0.6 is in the works. There's now a BSD version of War Linux, essentially. It's War BSD. And I think it's 0.1. I've downloaded it. I haven't used it, but check that out. I think I think there was a story on Slashdot. There's definitely a link to it on wardriving.com. So check out WarBSD, the War Linux equivalent. Next, I just saw, and I am prone to do, I go to SourceForge and I search around for stuff, and I found Linux drivers for the D-Link DWL120 USB NICs. Brand new, again, I think they're 0.1 version. So the guy I sold the DWL120 to at H2K2, you now have Linux drivers for it, so enjoy. Next, AZ War Driving. I actually got this link off. I've been there before, but I got this this notification that they've upgraded their site, Arizona War Driving, from wardriving.com. But it's a great site, especially if you want to get the very basics of war driving, the technology, the hardware, antennas, software, all that stuff. Go to azwardriving.com. It looks good, and there's good information. Pretty basic stuff, but definitely a good site to check out. And lastly, actually, you've got some Wi-Fi, Stank, which pleases me. We're going to talk a little bit, Stank's going to talk about some Wi-Fi at McDonald's. We touched on it in the past about how you get a free hour if you buy a big bag of grease, and then if you want another hour, it's like $3. I'm like, I don't remember actually. But Stank, please, what kind of info do you have on Wi-Fi at McDonald's?
I just found it very interesting. Maybe it's part of the retail hacking of me coming out, or just the concept of, you know, how this is spreading out a lot. So I mean, it's pretty basic information that, but I just found it interesting. I thought we could cover a few simple topics, like we did mention before the pricing of it, but I thought maybe we'd repeat. First of all, I didn't realize this in the past, but the pricing that we had heard about, and a lot of people have heard about, is actually just during the pilot program. That is not necessarily a permanent price. It may end up being the permanent price, but what's going on is for the first 3 months of it, and this is only in New York right now. They don't have any other locations yet. It's only going on in New York while they're testing and see how it works. But for 3 months, anybody buying their extra value meal, and no, I'm not pimping McDonald's. I'm just reading this facts here.
Ugh, McDonald's makes me ill.
Receive 1 hour of high-speed internet access, or you can pay $3 to buy an hour of internet access. Now that's asinine because I think, I'm not sure, but doesn't an extra value bill cost about $3 or $4?
Don't know.
I mean, geez, you can buy it and give it to a homeless person or somebody
right.
hungry out there and use the hour if you really want it that awful bad, you know?
No doubt.
But after the pilot program, they got a couple different ways that they're supposedly going to offer or allow you to pay for the service. You can purchase a prepaid card through the restaurant. And Epiphany had actually mentioned to me that he had some promotion cards or something like that. So I'd like to get some more information. Again, this is just general stuff, and that's why I want to research this. And if anybody's got some information, by all means, let us know. But they're going to have prepaid cards. I don't know how they're going to measure if it's going to be like prepaid phones, you know, where you have so many minutes or so many, is it like a monthly thing? You know, all that kind of stuff, you know, it yet to be seen. But some type of prepaid program they're going to have. They also claim, see, this is through McDonald's right now, but the company that's providing it, which unfortunately I don't know off the top of my head, the company that's providing it is also probably going to be doing it with other restaurants, other companies, and stuff like that. So they're also working on programs where you can have a relationship with that service provider so that maybe if you use that particular company, if you use whatever service provider, then maybe it'll be built in or part of your plan or part of your program, so to speak.
Hmm.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting possibility.
That is.
Prearranged purchase agreement through the employer and the service provider. So McDonald's technically could offer to you flat out for free. You know, it's all their decision. They're going to work out a plan with the service provider on how much it costs them to do it. Now, will they pass the cost on to you? Obviously, that's what they're planning on doing, and they want to charge you for an hour or prepay it or whatever, or if you buy the extra value meal. I'm predicting, I don't know about you, Duel, but I'm guessing that once this pilot program is over, they're not going to give it out free with the value meals.
No.
Or if they do, they might extend the pilot maybe for the first 3 or 6 months as it spreads around each new place, but I don't see them giving out free access with value meals forever or for any length of time.
No, I picture just like upsizing. Would you like to upsize that for 59 cents or whatever it is? Well, yeah. Would you like an hour of wireless for 99 cents? That's what it's going to be. It's going to be an impulse buy.
Yeah, I see the same thing. I really don't think that they're going to provide it. However, from a hacking standpoint, from a security standpoint, I can't help but wonder some of the technical details of it.
I can't wait.
Yeah, by looking at the service provider's site, they say that there's no account required to take advantage of the offer. All you have to do is they're going to have some kind of scratch-off card is the way they're doing the prepaid, or at least for the when you buy the extra value, you scratch off the card, and I guess they give you a code of some kind. Well, that's, you know, codes, of course, make my eyebrows raise. I can't wait to see if I can find a pattern or crack the codes, et cetera, see if they're authenticated somewhere and looked up in a database to see if they're valid or if they're just an algorithm-generated code. There's just infinite possibilities there to play with that.
Oh, yeah. Or accidentally leaving, you know, TCP dump running when you're, you know, hanging around McDonald's.
Easy ways to see if you can generate your own codes. And
yes.
If they're looked up through some central database, you know, there's a lot more things that we can't probably go into too much detail about. It would be way too long to show. But anyways, a lot of interesting things to talk about there. Basically, you get an hour with a generic or standard card. Some of the technical details right now, they say that, well, basically, the first few steps of the directions, I'll sum up, and it's basically figure out your own damn wireless. We're not going to help you. So you have to take care of your own wireless and configure your own card and yada, yada, yada. It says right now that it has to be running, when I know a lot of listeners are going to love this, you have to be running Windows 2000 XP or Mac OS X.
Really?
Yeah,
you
even the Mac
98 or
the Mac OS X is actually a surprise on there, but of course, I don't think anybody's surprised that there is no Linux or Unix.
Yeah, no surprise there. But what does surprise me is that you can't use like Windows 98 or ME. I bet you there's tons of people still using that on their laptops.
Yeah, you know, I think this is really what is it? It's that Intel's new wireless.
That's not new though, Centrino. That's not new.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, but they're putting a push. It's not necessarily new, but they're really pushing it right now.
Right.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. But they also emphasize in several places that it works like regular 802.11.b. It is 802.11.b. Mm-hmm. So they keep saying that, yes, you can check your POP email. Yes, you can use a VPN through it. Yes, you can yada, yada, yada. So I bet you, you know, that if you had Unix, Linux, Nopix on your laptop, I bet you could get it to work. You'd be completely on your own to do it.
Right.
I bet you could get it to work.
Oh, sure.
And when you start up, you have to go to the McDonald's wireless login page. You'll put in username and password from your scratch-off card. When they say password, I'm assuming they mean the code.
Right. I want a screenshot of that so bad.
Yeah, whatever's on there. Maybe somebody can scan it in and mail us a JPEG of what the cards look like or something like that.
Yeah.
And it says, it doesn't tell you the questions. It says, after answering four brief questions, reading the user agreement, and clicking on I agree, your session will begin.
I want an ethereal capture of all of that.
Exactly. I would love to see that step-by-step of how it works and possibly some loopholes about getting out of it. You know, it's I did read that it says if you get disconnected or something like that, you can go back and re-log in with the password again and use the rest of your time. I wonder how long it lasts. I wonder if you go in and check, you know, you buy your value meal on a Monday and use 10 minutes to check your email. Do you still have 50 minutes left, you know, when you come back on Friday?
Or yeah, good question.
Expire? Does it last for a week, a month? I mean, it's prepaid, right?
Right, yeah, and I wonder if it's hardware tied, right? If it's tied to MAC address, like it logs it to that card, and then, you know, could you hand it off to your buddy if you have a half hour left and he could use it, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that. Yeah, but what's the point? You know, why not swap the card? You know, there's going to be probably, I don't know if this is a bad estimate, but I would guess still 90 to 95% of the people, maybe even more, are going to buy their value meal and toss the card in the trash. Or throw it away in the bag. They won't even open it and scratch it off and look at it because they don't want it or need it. They want their extra super duper deluxe size French fries, their big goopy hamburger and
goopy.
Gigantic shake, you know.
What a great word, goopy. That's the word of the night, folks, goopy. Yeah, boy, that'd be some nasty dumpster diving for wireless access, wouldn't it?
It'd be a whole trend, diving for wireless
coverage. I would rather dive at like a combo Chinese food restaurant daycare dumpster than a McDonald's dumpster.
I did not think about that. Now you got me laughing because I didn't foresee. Yeah, you're right. There will be people out digging in the parking lot, trash, looking for
wireless
cards.
Yeah, but think about it. You get a bunch of, you know, even if they're, you know, used up, right? You get a bunch of your cards and then, you know, check out the codes and you can start looking for that pattern. Who knows? Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to explore that. Hopefully they'll get past New York and get out west here. That would be really nice. But, yeah, if somebody can get me a screen cap of that, you know, McDonald's freaking login screen, anything, you know, a browser capture, whatever, and send it to me, I would love to have that. I would love that on my desktop. I would do that. That'd be so cool. I would make a website just for that.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
That'd rock.
Yeah. The website for it, if anybody wants to go, is MCD, McD Wireless, all one word, .com.
Ooh.
And there's really not much there because it's only in New York, but you can find the FAQ and some of the things I just read to you and link to the service provider. But what I thought was kind of funny or interesting was their logo. They're going to put a logo basically on the front door of the restaurants that indicates whether that particular restaurant supports it or has that feature or not.
Oh, let me guess. Is it going to be the upside down M?
Almost. What it is an at sign. The at sign, except instead of the little letter A in the at sign, it's a little McDonald's M.
Found it. Oh, man, two cliches in one. Can't get any better. So there's a little Wi-Fi for you. I haven't talked wireless in a long time, so enjoy that. Now it's time. You got your tones? Second week in a row, I forgot my freaking tones, man. I'm pissed.
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Is that loud?
Yeah, that was just, all right, good. That was good. We heard that. I want to talk, I was going to talk Quest. I'll save Quest LD for the last. Actually, I only got two things here. First, I'll talk Palm Docs. Palm Documents. If you've listened to Off the Hook, I don't know how long ago, a month ago, I guess, I don't know, Emmanuel called some AT&T numbers, some multilingual operators, and he got those numbers from Lucky 225, and I'm assuming Lucky got them from USA, here's the website, www.usa.att.com/traveler. It's the AT&T International page. And there's some great Palm documents down there, you know, for your handheld devices, not just Palms. Two files, actually. One, access numbers, right? Access AT&T access numbers for any country you can think of, and another country codes. That access number file is awesome. I mean, I put it on my palm and I read it. I don't know how long. I just sat there and just soaked it in. It's great. You learn a lot about other countries' telephone systems through that one little text file that you put on your handheld device. And it's got all those numbers. You go to the United States, and it's got all those, you know, multilingual operator numbers. So, great resource. Check it out. Again, www.usa.att.com/traveler. Now, last week's show, I taped myself signing up for Quest Long Distance. If anybody noticed, I asked the gentleman who was helping me, does this offer ever expire? And he said, no, as long as you have Quest service, you will have this rate, which is $30 per month, unlimited nationwide long distance. I said, great, sign me up. They go and get a third-party verifier to make sure that there's no, you know, there's no slamming, and they want to make sure that you have your recorded statement that you want to switch, in my case, from AT&T to Quest. And he stated, do you want this service, blah, 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 $30 a month for 12 months? And I said, whoa, whoa, back up the truck, Paco, 12 months. And I said, the gentleman I just spoke to said, as long as I have Quest service, it didn't expire. And he's, oh man, he's just started backpedaling. Well, that's what they say. I said, okay, whatever. I'll take it. 12 months is still a great deal for $30 unlimited long distance. So, a discrepancy, my friends. Maybe a slight one. I don't know. To me, it sounds like they're pimping this like, hey, as long as you hang with Quest, right, you chill with us, you get $30 a month all the time. Well, that third-party verifier has it recorded, you accepting, well, in my case, I did accept this 12-month offer. So, we'll see. I guess I'll hang with it for a year and see if it's still around. So.
And that's what those third-party verifiers are for, because that's the one that counts when they are
right.
Recorded with third-party, specifically saying what it is. That's when the real truth comes out. Everything else they tell you before is what they call hearsay.
Yes, well, funny thing, though, that I was recording that, and everybody heard it. I don't know if that's legal or not, but yeah, it's exactly what they do. They can pimp anything, all they want, talk out their ass, and then they get that third-party verifier and record it, and screw you, basically. So, I also learned that $30 a month is one rate. You can also get another rate that's even cheaper, believe it or not. It's like $19.95, $20 a month basically for that same unlimited service, but you have to sign up for one of their packages. And I think the cheapest is the preferred package, which is call waiting, three-way calling, call forwarding, and caller ID, and maybe something else, I'm not sure, at least those four class features. So that's $24.95 a month. Then you add on that, and then with that package you get the $20 a month rate. That's a good deal. I actually signed up for both. A very good deal. We'll see, though. We'll see what the service is like. We'll see what the long distance is like. And we'll see. And it's going to take a while. We'll see what that 12 months bears. Yeah, isn't that a bunch of crap? Total crap. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. It just disgusts me to hear about it. I don't know, you know, what else to say without going into a huge rant about how much I hate the long distance companies and the phone companies in general. We've made it abundantly clear how I feel about it.
Yes, abundantly. They're really goopy, those telcos. Yeah, and I hope everybody else caught that. If not, just go back and listen to at least the beginning of last week's show. I was actually going to mix it down, you know, do some scratching with the guy saying forever and the other guy saying 12 months, but you know, I don't think I have to. I don't have to belabor that any longer. So that's the freak news. Good freak news, though. I can't wait. I can't wait to explore our Quest Long Distance, and I will let everybody know everything that I learn. So that's the end of the freak news.
All right, let me see.
Thank you, man.
All right, did I close it out?
Yeah, that's good enough. Right on. Next week, I promise next week the tones will be back. They will be back. Okay, now it's time for the hacker news. You love it. You know it.
And we gotta get our porn music from last week to bounce.
Yeah, dude. Oh man, I'm all over porn. Okay.
Is that the official hacker now? I guess I do that. Actually, just a couple short things on the hacker news this time. One of them actually came from RootSecure.net, our good friend Nick84's site. I found it kind of an interesting article there, and it was in regards to forensic tools, and actually more precisely anti-forensic tools. Forensics tools, for people who don't know, are the tools that basically law enforcement, or anybody really, security administrators, but mostly law enforcement are the ones that really get into it and use the word forensics anyway. When they, you know, when they arrest people, when they arrest hackers or fraud or whatever, anybody that they want to check their hard drives, things like that, they use something called forensics tools to basically search the hard drive and try to find files and data and decrypt data and decrypt files, et cetera, et cetera. Which is, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but it never hurts to repeat this, but hard drives, anytime you get rid of a hard drive or you want to reformat a hard drive, the data is still there. It's very hard to get rid of current data permanently from your hard drive. There are utilities out there to override it with X's and zeros over and over, however many times there's a government standard on what they consider unrecoverable.
Yes.
Just deleting it and just emptying recycle bin or just deleting stuff off the command line or whatever does not free up your data. It may keep the operating system from seeing it anymore, but physically that data is still there. Physically the magnetics of that is still happening and can be recovered.
Very true.
That, yeah, not only that, but the files that you have encrypted on there, because of government regulations, which I'm not going to go into a rant on that, and the limits on what you can do with encryption, to a certain extent, a lot of the encryption can be easily decrypted. And that's what a lot of these forensic tools, they do those two things, recovering supposedly deleted or gone data and decrypting files. So the article actually was not about that. The article was about the rise of anti-forensics tools. Like two of the most famous, or probably the one most famous that I've heard of, is the Defiler's Toolkit. There's another one they mentioned called BurnEye, B-U-R-N-E-Y-E, which I'd never heard of before. But
cool name.
Yeah, they basically talked about the rise of these and how they're becoming more popular. They're Linux tools, or Unix tools, I should say, or Nix tools right now, but they are being ported over. There are people that are working on getting these over to other operating systems, and it has the security people scared. It has the security people nervous, because when they get this ported over to Windows, people are going to have a lot more accessibility to it. It's going to make it easier to use for script kiddies or general users, or anybody for that matter, to start protecting themselves from these forensic tools. And I mean, that's the point of it. That's the whole thing, is protecting your privacy once again further, so that they don't come in afterwards and start pulling information out, or, you know, who's to say they're not making information up and saying that, oh yeah, the forensic utility we found all kinds of child porn on your computer, and we found hacking programs and credit card. You know, you can't really defend yourself or say a whole lot to that.
Right.
Because they've got this software that they can hide behind. Well, with anti-forensics software, you can start defending yourself and protecting yourself. Because, actually, I'll give you a quote here that kind of pissed me off a little bit. It's from the SANS Institute Conference, which is a security group, a very famous security group, security conference. Ed Scoutis, let's see, have we given, I'm not going to give a fuck end of the month for this, I'm just going to say what an asshole he is.
Okay.
He's basically saying that the rise of the tools is a battle between good and bad guys in finding hidden code inside machines. His quote goes on to say, it's an arms race. It's what it really is. End quote.
An arms race?
Yeah, the good guys, bad guys thing, first of all, boils my blood. Who's to say who's the good and bad guys? And if anything, it might be the other way around that he's referring to it. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, when he says it's an arms race, you're damn right it's an arms race. You're damn right it is. And as long as you want to keep this arms race going, the hackers are always going to win. They're always going to be ahead. Everything that you can do, we can undo. We can do better. We can prevent. So you can make up all this crap that you want to, but you're always reactive, while we're always proactive, and you're always going to lose an arm race with smart people, with hackers. They're always going to win.
Yeah, and this arms race, I mean, you know, the second word pops up again here, privacy. Yeah. If anything, I definitely want to win. If there's a war fighting for my privacy, for crying out loud, I do want to win.
Oh, and it's absolutely what it is. It's ironic that he calls this an arms race and insinuates a war between, quote, good guys and bad guys. You know, that's, I don't appreciate the whole bad guy thing. I'm not a bad guy. You don't know me. He doesn't know me. You know, how's he going
right.
to... I'm a bad guy. I'm a bad guy for trying to prevent invasion of my privacy? Something that I have a constitutional God-given right to?
You're evil.
Keeping you from invading my privacy and I'm the bad guy?
You are malevolent.
Please explain this to me. I just do not get it. I mean, until corporate America learns that they're always going to learn, until they learn that privacy is something that's important, yes, a war for privacy and freedom is going to continue, and we are always going to be on the cutting edge and on the winning end of this war. So, you know, you guys keep pushing, but we are always going to be there. The good guys are always going
to
be there.
That's right. We are the good guys. I'm going to take this. I'm going to take 1 second here to pin. This brings up a really good subject. If you want the ultimate invasion of privacy, the real-life matrix, it is being thought of as we speak, and I'm hoping to get a special guest on, and we're going to discuss that very fact, so keep your eye open for that. Okay.
But yeah, and that's basically it. If anybody wants to learn more about these anti-forensics programs, just do a Google search for BurnEye, B-U-R-N-E-Y-E, or Defiler Toolkit, D-E-F-I-L-E-R, Defiler's Toolkit. And, you know, if it's something that interests you, and it should, and you feel like you want that or need that to protect your privacy, you know, go check those out.
Awesome.
Another very short anecdote here is the Buffalo Spammer was arrested, finally. Howard Carmack, the notorious Buffalo Spammer, was accused of sending more than 825 million unsolicited emails from illegal Earthlink accounts.
Hmm.
825 million.
Wow.
The funny thing about this story is, besides the fact that spammers are one step above, or they're parallel to child pornographers. They're right down there at the bottom of the barrel, just the lowest end of the food chain.
Ooh, that hurts.
They're down there.
Yeah, that's low.
He was arrested in New York. He had 4 felony and 2 misdemeanor counts. The interesting thing about this is that they did not necessarily arrest him for quote-unquote spamming. He's not arrested for spamming. He got arrested for stealing credit cards and identities to fraudulently create these Earthlink accounts that he used to send spam.
Wow.
I thought that was kind of funny, kind of ironic, funny ha-ha, not funny ha-ha, but funny ironic that he actually got busted for fraud. For the credit card fraud, not for the fraud of sending out unsolicited emails and stuff like that. So he was sending out this email for herbal therapy and who knows what else, all these scams, but he got credit card information and is accused of banking fraud and several other things, and that's really what he got busted for. So I thought that kind of ironic that, yes, we got rid of this huge spammer, but we didn't really get him for spamming. We still don't have good spamming laws. We've talked the last week or two about some new spamming laws that are in progress or upcoming, but they still haven't made a spamming law that we can enforce yet. So in this particular case, it's great. We got a spammer off the streets, but we had to do it a different way, a roundabout way, through a loophole, through whatever you want to call it. I guess it's not a loophole because he did commit fraud.
Right, through his other crimes.
Yeah, but you know, but at the same time, I'm not going to be sympathetic to him because, like I said, he's way down there on my food chain. But at the same time, I can't help but wonder, okay, that to a certain extent, that's what they do to hackers a lot. That's what they do to a lot of people. Well, we can't bust you on this, but we'll make up something else or we'll find some other reason to bust you after the fact, you know? So to a certain extent, I really don't know how to feel about this. Obviously, I'm happy that he's been caught, but, you know, that to a certain extent, it's like... I wish they did have spam laws that they could enforce and that they could make work, but they don't. I mean, should we feel any, I guess not sympathy, but concern that they had to do it this way to make this happen?
Yes, I think we should. Spam laws are becoming more prevalent in more states. It's going to be a long time before you see any national law. You know, maybe, were they going after this guy for spam, or were they looking at the identity theft or the fraud? That's what I'm wondering. Did they originally go after him for the fraud and say, "Well, hey, he's a spammer." They brought he brought attention to himself because he was a spammer, and guess what? You know, you were committing fraud all along. That's right.
I guess only the people on the inside will ever know the truth.
Right.
I can only assume what you just said, that the fact that he sends out all the spam mails is what drew the attention to him.
Right.
Just like, and you know, I'll just throw this out there for debate, just like me operating a hacking website or running a hacking radio show like yourself, you know, okay, well, that's not in and of itself illegal. We have a right to privacy, but what's to stop them from going and saying, hey, well, we were listening to your show, so we started watching your ass, and then we found this on your site to arrest you with. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not sure how to feel about that, you know?
Yeah. Time will tell, especially with, you know, if you read Slashdot, which I do, I'm sure everybody does, read Slashdot constantly, and you will make, you know, when new laws come out, when new developments arise in this nation regarding spam laws, you will be the first to know. You will be enlightened, as they say. I read Slashdot multiple times a day.
Yeah, oh, there's just so much information and constantly feedback and people posting, you know, more and from follow-up information. That's definitely a multiple visits.
Rax was on there the other day. He had a story on the front page there.
Cool.
Good one, too, yeah. So is that the Hacker News?
Yeah, that's boy, that
very nice.
Probably took a lot longer than we thought, but just that's we'll close the Hacker News for this.
Awesome. Hacker.
We're coming up.
So everybody now, imagine porn music.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
That's
wait a minute.
Right.
People might not be able to, might not be old enough to hear porn. And
oh, yeah.
So we have to simulate the bow, chicka, bow, bow.
And I want to say this again. Keep your eyes and ears open for a special guest. I'm working on this. I'm hoping to get this soon about the real life Matrix. All right, this is some crazy ass shit, and I want to have a special.
Excited! I'm all excited to hear that too. I can't wait.
It's gonna rock. It's gonna rock. Okay, we don't have much time left. Let's get on to the big Microsoft review. Stinks. MS Server 2003 review.
I gotta catch my breath after the Hacker News.
Are you serious? Dude, this is a good review. Stinks actually informed me a little bit about this and some of the crazy shit that 2003 does. It's unbelievable.
It's actually funny. It's actually laughable, kind of funny, some of the stuff. But
I think it's kind of creepy myself.
Yeah, it is. There's some weird stuff, but some basic information I'll give you about it. First of all, as listeners know, I guess it was probably a month or so ago, I went to the Microsoft Server 2003 launch, which also was the .NET 2003 launch, which is really where I went. But we got a copy, a demo of Microsoft Server 2003. So I'm in the process of redoing a box and installing Linux on it. But we do Linux reviews quite a bit on here, and there's other people that are definitely more capable of talking about Linux than myself. So I figured, why not go with the Microsoft Server 2003 review? So here we go. First of all, the machine that I was upgrading from was actually my old machine I'd been running for years. Had been upgraded from 9X to ME to 2000 to XP. So it needed to be wiped and redone completely. So before I did that, I figured, what the hell, might as well upgrade one more time. So I went ahead and upgraded it to the Microsoft Server 2003. Well, when you try to run that, it wants to, first of all, I ran it from within XP. It forces you to reboot. Says you can't, you know, upgrade from XP inside. You have to do a full install. So it reboots, boots from the CD, and runs the install. First thing it does is it changes the file system to NTFS. I think I had it on FAT32 before because I wanted it to be interoperable with the Linux boxes I had on my internal network, and I wanted it to be as fairly generic as I could, so I'd never run NTFS. But this one pretty much forced me to do that. Said it was going to warn me I was going to lose data, reformat my hard drive. Deletes the My Documents folder, which I thought was kind of interesting. It warns you that it's going to delete the My Documents and the contents of it. Yeah, sure, whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
Please.
So it reformatted the hard drive, rebooted again, and basically after the install was over, I checked just for the hell of it. It did not really do a full reinstall. I still had, like, Counter-Strike and some games and some other silly things installed on it. They were still there. It didn't truly reformat my hard drive.
Weird.
I thought it was very unusual. All the shortcuts to them were gone, but the data was still there, so I'm not sure what to think about that. It didn't do a true reinstall and complete rehash of it. It was treated it kind of sort of like an upgrade.
Hmm.
But the update itself was a little bit different than any I had seen from Microsoft in the past. It did a dynamic update. When it's doing the install process, it does its standard copying the files. It reboots once or twice, detects some hardware. But it comes up with a connect to update files, where they want you to connect to the internet and see if there's any updates to your files. They always give you this in the past. Make sure you have the latest files. You know, don't just take from the seat. So this machine was not even connected to my network. You know, I didn't want to connect this. I don't, who knows what Microsoft's going to scan and report. So I didn't have it even hooked to a network to update. So I was able to skip that. It wasn't required. But the disturbing thing was when it asked you about that, it does not, or when it told you, I shouldn't say asked you, because that is the point. It didn't ask me. It told me that I should connect to get the update files. In the past, when that happens, they would go out of their way, whether you believe it or not, at least they would come up and say, warning, you are connecting to Microsoft. We are not sending personal information. We are only gathering software. You know, they give you some kind of disclaimer. Now, whether that held true or not, whether they're really tracking you, that's debatable. But this time, they did not give you any disclaimer. They didn't give you a warning saying, we are not sending personal information. We are not sending your key. They did not say that this time. You know, silence is golden. Silence can say a lot sometimes. And the fact that they didn't tell me that makes me assume that they probably are.
Oh, yes.
And there was some weird questions that I didn't understand on booting it up about licensing. It wanted to know how many licenses I wanted. How many licenses was I going to have within this network? How many? I pretty much just said one on everything and shot right on through the whole thing because I'm just testing it to see how it looked and how it acted. But my guess is that it's going to connect and authenticate that license and show me at my IP address and whatever information it pulls off my system to identify that license. I think they've got some licensing arrangement going on that they're going to try to crack down on supposed piracy, I guess, and try to watch. I think it's going to be a mess because I think there's just every institution is set up differently and site licensing and all those kind of things are going to be pretty difficult to track and there might be some false accusations in there. I hope they have that under control, but thought that was a little bit scary that they wanted to report me back to Big Brother.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to have to definitely read the end user license agreement when using 2003. Sounds like that's going to be mandatory.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, I don't condone piracy anyway, but if some listener out there decides they want to do this, maybe they're testing their machine ahead of time to see if it's compatible. Maybe they're testing it out to see if they would like it or try it before they commit to licensing, and they want to find, do not go out there and try to do this, connect it to the internet, and report this information because you may be inadvertently violating some kind of licensing agreement. So be very careful about that.
Very good tip.
Something else that, this is kind of a good thing, I guess you'd say, but when it comes up, it wants you to set the root, well, not root, I guess administrator, what they would call the administrator password, administrator account. Well, they actually, the whole install was very, put a lot of emphasis on security, or false security, if that's also debatable, but on security. And the first thing that struck my attention to that was when it wanted the administrator and set up an administrator password. Again, this was just for me to test, so I just put in a dumb, quick little password, easy to remember, and it popped up a warning. It says, warning, this is not a, quote, strong password. So, and it wasn't, they're absolutely right, but I just didn't care at this point. But it came up with tips on what a strong password is. It says you should use the first two suggestions that they give, which is at least 6 characters, and does not contain the word admin or administrator. So rules out those two things. Plus 3 of these other 4 options they recommend contains uppercase letters, contains lowercase letters, contains numbers, and contains an alphanumeric character. So they're giving you directions on how to set up a strong password.
That's good.
But that is actually kind of a good thing. Now, a long time coming, but, you know, they finally at least are suggesting it. I still said, fuck you, just use my dumb password anyway. You can skip through it.
Right.
But at least they try to tell me. At least they can say they covered their ass, like we told the listener earlier, cover your ass. They said, hey, we tried to warn him to use a good password, you know? This 2003 server is built on Windows 2000 server. It is not a branch of XP. It doesn't look like XP. It looks just like Windows 2000 server for the most part. You really, really can't tell much of a difference. There's no new architecture that I could distinctly see on first glance. It has IIS6. By default, it installs IIS6. It doesn't activate anything when you install it. You have to go through and activate this stuff. Everything is restricted by default this time, which is something that Microsoft was bad about in the past. They would activate stuff to be most convenient to the user, most easy to configure and set up. They've gone away from that now. The emphasis is on security. Even when you start Internet Explorer browser for the first time, not a server or anything, the browser, it defaults at the high security level.
Wow.
So they're starting to default everything and make settings at the hardest, most high security and restrictions that they can put on it, and then you lower them down, so it's all on you for accountability. If somebody gets in, it's because you lowered it out of the box.
Hmm.
And they emphasize XML a lot. But the server software itself, the way the server works, is they're putting emphasis on what they call roles, R-O-L-E-S, and they're putting server roles. When it comes up, it starts off with a list of possible roles you can set the computer to do. Like, for example, a file server. You can set it up to be an Internet IIS server, an ASP server, an FTP server, a streaming media server. You can set all these up, and they call them roles. And there's basically a list of them, and you can put a check by it, and it'll pop up a wizard and walk you through setting up that server, at least the basics. Now, I'm sure behind it there's a lot more settings that you can tweak, but for the most part, you select it, and I just, for the hell of it, I said, sure, I'll set it up for a file server. It walks me through, sets about mapping drives, putting a password on some of those drives, authentication, et cetera, et cetera. And it walks you through. So it basically, they made it very simple for home users or anybody to set up a server. It's less intensive or less administrative intensive and easier for a home user to set up a server. They're kind of setting it up so anybody can do it.
Would a home user use 2003?
Well, no. No, they would not. And that's, let me tell you, first of all, the home user is not going to sit 2 hours, which is what it took me to install this. Two hours on this process. And this was a P3866 with 512 memory.
Plenty fast.
2 hour process. 40 gigabyte hard disk that I have on there that it checked and converted to NTFS as part of that process. Also, with 2000, you could use this as a home user. You could actually use Windows 2000 as your desktop. It had,
yes,
a lot of the apps. It had silly games. You can install, you know, whatever you wanted on it and still use it as a desktop. I did. With this one, it doesn't really come out of the box ready to do that. I guess you probably could install apps to it, but out of the box it came with a lot less user apps. It's mostly server apps. And even the smallest little thing that annoyed the hell out of me is, again, I had files on there because I had upgraded. Well, I went through there, I was browsing through and trying to delete stuff just through the Explorer window. Everything I wanted to delete popped up with a confirmation window. Are you sure you want to delete this? Well, yeah, I hit the delete button, didn't I, dumbass? It kept prompting me to delete everything. I looked everywhere in every setting and configuration to try to turn off confirmation. You can't do it.
I can't
find it. Maybe you can, but I couldn't find it.
Is there a recycle bin?
They don't want you to delete.
Is there a recycle bin?
There is a recycle bin, I believe, yeah.
And you right-click on it and click
properties? And it'll empty your trash the same as, yeah.
But you right-click, go to properties, and there's no... No turning off the confirmation there?
I don't think I saw it there, no.
No kidding.
I don't think I saw it. I can look again, but yeah, I don't remember seeing it there. I looked everywhere.
Crazy.
So, it may be there, and I have to, but it won't be on my system long enough for me to...
Really? It sounds like it really wants you to do what it wants you to do.
Exactly. It does, and it pushes you to do that. It's a lot like Windows 2000, except with fewer apps, fewer default apps. So it's definitely not something for a home user to use, and it's a dumbified server, you know, and a lot of big companies are going to roll this out of the box and set it up for whatever role and use the defaults now that they're supposedly stronger and emphasis on security, and they're going to have this false peace of mind that it works. Well, the first time that somebody finds that their defaults or have a misconfiguration in it, they're back in the same boat where security administrators are scrambling around trying to find patches, and they realize they can't use it out of the box, which is what they're trying to gear it for. So, you know, it remains to be seen if their security is going to be as good and as high as they're hoping it to be.
Sounds to me like wizards are detrimental to security.
Yeah, they really are. If they don't have strong native security, if there's one tiny bug in it and you're depending on that wizard, yeah, you're out of luck. You know, what this is going to do is promote a lot of people to be administrators, and you know, Jeff the mailroom guy is going to come in and say, oh yeah, I can run it. Windows 2003 server? Sure, all you got to do is click on roll and say go with the wizard and it's done. Well, guess what, Jeff? If there's any kind of problem that people are going to find out about eventually, are you going to be able to go in and apply patches and reconfigure it and look into the details of fixing that kind of stuff? So I think a lot of people are going to be in over their head, you know, if there is problems that come out of this.
Yeah, I think people need to get down and dirty.
Yeah, the funniest thing about this, and I'll end with this because this is the funniest part about it, is, you know, I played with it for a little while, a couple hours, just to see what it was like to write this review. But the funniest thing about this was, I just left the scene there running. I had to shut it down because I wanted to take the sound card out of it to put over into another box. The funniest thing was, and this reminds me of the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey with HAL, the computer. When I tried to shut down, and it shut down just like any other. You go to start menu, shut down. It comes up with three options on the drop-down list. Do you want to restart? Do you want to shut down? Do you want to hibernate or whatever? But there's three buttons at the bottom, okay, cancel, or help. Well, okay, so I tried to click on, from the drop-down list, I selected shut down the computer, and I clicked on the okay button, and nothing happened. What the hell's going on, right? Wait a minute. The okay button is grayed out.
What?
Why the hell is the okay button grayed out? I want to shut down my computer. And it reminded me of the scene from 2001. It says, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't allow that. I want to shut the computer down. What the hell are you doing?
No, you don't.
There is another drop-down box beneath that. I think you actually, I'm not sure if you had to click on an advanced button to get to it, but if you want to shut down 2003 server, you have to give it a reason.
No.
Tell it why you want to shut the system down.
Can you type in, like, I have to take a crap or something that?
It has a drop-down list again of some common ones like hardware repair, software repair, virus removal, which is ironic if it's so secure, why would you need some of those? But anyway, I won't go there.
Right.
It had this list of about seven or eight different things, and then it had an other, and it has a freestyle typing box. And I said, just shut the fucking machine down. Basically, all it does, I think, is it sends that reason, date and time stamp, and the user who's logged on, I think it logs it. So if anybody wants to go back, they have accountability of who shut the machine down and who did what and who restarted and why.
Right.
So it's an accountability of which admin did what at what time, and, you know, they can go back and blame the person or fire Jeff, the mailroom guy, because he screwed something up. But it did not want to shut down until I gave it a reason. And then it finally shut down.
Watching porn.
Yeah. must reboot the computer to Nopix so that I can...
That is hilarious.
It kind of freaked me out because my first thing was, shut down. What do you mean you're not... Where's the button? What the hell are you trying to pull here?
I'll fucking unplug your ass is what I'll do. That's what I would say.
It would have totally freaked me out. I could have unplugged it and it would have went, sorry, Dave. I know what you were thinking.
That.
I simply cannot allow that.
That is awesome.
No, it was scary. It was really creepy, man.
That is. I told you, that is creepy. That's some creepy shit. That is a great review, by the way. I actually want to pound on this, and I can't wait till the information starts pouring in, right? I'll be going to Bug Track, and you'll be seeing the 2003 stuff. I mean, you can't blame Microsoft. It's going to happen.
But I have to admit, you know, at least they upped the ante on the defaults. I have to say, you know, you guys can bash them all you want. At least by requiring or at least recommending strong passwords and by setting the default security at the highest level, they do push accountability back to the user. And I think that is their underlying effort. They would never say that out loud. But, you know, every time somebody, a Microsoft server gets hacked or they find a default setting, the default password for admin is always, you know, they always say, that's Microsoft's fault for having bad security. That's Microsoft. Well, now Microsoft can say, no, we tried to warn them. We set the things to far high out of the box. If somebody lowered them, that's the administrator's fault. You hacked the administrator's software. You didn't exactly hack Microsoft software.
Yeah, well,
that depends on how they go about doing it, and that remains to be seen, you know?
True, very true. Linux distro has been doing that for quite a while now.
Oh, yeah, it's obvious. Even with the way they walk you through setting up the root/admin.
Right.
No, it's a root is what it is. And they even warn you, do not run everything under admin. Just like they, you know, you should never stay signed on as root all the time. They warn you, don't stay signed on as admin. They definitely took a lot of their ideas from Unix.
Oh, I'm sure. What a great review. That was very enjoyable.
Man, I drank my whole Dr. Pepper during this, too.
Holy moly. Dude, that was a great review. I honestly can't say I've ever heard a Windows review that I've enjoyed so much.
Oh, well.
I don't know if I've ever heard a Windows review, to be honest with you, but still, that was quite enjoyable.
I hope some people liked it. I don't know if I'd bore people out, because we always do Linux reviews and distro reviews. I figured, let's twist it up a little bit. Let's do a Microsoft review for a change.
Very cool. Very cool. You know what? I want to end. I think we're over, but I don't care. I want to end on a phone call. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
All right.
I need a break.
Okay. All right. I will give it to you right now. I actually saw an advertisement for this on television. This is called InPhone. InFone. And it's basically like a concierge service. It's, upgraded directory assistance and a bunch of other crap. I'm not really sure. I want to explore it a little bit. The number is 888-411-1111. Again, this is InPhone, InFone. The number is 888-411-1111. I'm going to be exploring this. I'm going to be finding out who owns this. I don't even know who's running this. I'm going to scan some numbers around that. Who knows? But let's call them up and let's find out a little bit. I'll be right back, Stank. I will opt divert just for the hell of it. Thank you. Oh, my phone died. Crap. You know, the time I want to make a phone call and it craps out on me. I hit the flash. This is, you know, anybody who's checked out RFA in the past has heard this freaking disaster. I hit the flash and it drops everything. The light just goes like the freaking Death Star. All right, I'm dialing up Stank here. Okay, Don Stank, getting him back. I guess we'll have to wait on this phone call. All right, you know what? I think I found a workaround. Hold on a second. I'm going to flash. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm not going to off-divert, and I'm not putting on speaker. 888-411-1111. Stank, still there? Okay. Let's see if it's ringing, then I'll put on speaker. There we go. All
right.
We're up.
Welcome to InPhone. When you hear the tone, say, hello, InPhone.
Hello.
Hello, this is Blake. How can I help you?
Hi, Blake. My name is Mike, and I'd like to get some information about InPhone, if I could, please. I actually saw an advertisement for it on a NASCAR race, and I'd like some information. What exactly is this concierge directory assistance service?
Well, InPhone offers enhanced directory assistance. Concierge services and call completion across the United States and Canada. You simply call our toll-free number to use the service. After you reach an operator, you will only be charged 89 cents for the first 15 minutes and 5 cents for each additional minute. A credit or a debit card is required to set up your service. There's no cost or commitment to sign up, no monthly fees, and you only pay for what you use. Also, you can make 5 free phone calls your first 30 days after sign up. Do you have any questions, or would you like to get started?
Yeah, well, no questions right now. So can you, you won't be, like, booking, airline reservations or buying movie tickets, stuff like that, just directory assistance and call completion?
All we do is we can find a movie theater for you. We can tell you what's playing and times for the movie theater.
Okay.
Restaurant reservations, hotel reservations, those kinds of things.
It sounds to me, basically, it's so hard to get in touch with a human on the phone. Sounds like this is a subscription service to speak to a human and actually get helpful, friendly help.
That's one way of looking at it.
Okay. All right. Well, no, I'm not interested right now, but I really appreciate your help.
Pleasant day.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Oh, my phone stayed up. Right on.
All right.
Hey, so that's InPhone. I'm going to check that out. I don't know. Maybe I'll even subscribe. What the hell? No fees except for the calls, which is, what do you say, 89 cents for 15 minutes?
Yeah, I didn't quite understand the whole fee thing, but I don't know. I just don't like it. We're paying for something that used to be free.
Right, exactly. That's
paying
just
to not speak to the annoying-ass automated systems.
Right.
And that's just fundamentally wrong.
That's just the gist of it. You have to pay now to speak to a human. It's a subscription service to speak to these wonderfully rare humans.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the reality, though. As much as I hate it, I have to admit,
I can't wait. I will find out who's running this, and we'll let everybody know. That is InPhone, and this is Radio Freak America. Thank you very much, Stank.
Peace out.
All right, late.